buy this supremacy anymore. Uh-huh. And because of this anger that they have, we could see ourselves in a regional war at any moment.
Indeed. Okay, thank you so much. Unfortunately, we're fresh out of time, but thank you for your contribution, Laith Maruf, activist and political commentator from Beirut. Daniel Kobalik, a pleasure. Thank you for your input. Professor of International Human Rights at the University of Pittsburgh School of Law, who spoke to us from Pittsburgh. With that, we come to an end for this edition of The Spotlight. From Mikhail Tatway, entire team, this goodbye until next time.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily via the internet address www.parstoday.com/en. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Intelsat 902, and Eutelsat satellite, as well as via internet. You can also listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for more details. Now we enlighten you with verses 162 to 165 of chapter Al-An'am from the Holy Quran, recited by Murtaza Fatemi.
A'udhu billahi minash shaytanir rajim. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Qul inna salati ونسكي ومحياي ومماتي لله رب العالمين لا شريك له وبذلك أمرت وأنا أول المسلمين قل أغير الله أبغي ربا وهو رب كل شيء ولا تكسب كل نفس إلا عليها ولا تزر وازرة وزر أخرى ثم إلى ربكم مرجعكم فينبئكم
In the name of God, the Compassionate, the Merciful. Say, surely my prayer and my sacrifice and my life and my death are all for Allah, the Lord of the worlds. No associate has He, and this am I commanded, and I am the first of those who submit. Say, what shall I seek, a Lord other than Allah? And He is the Lord of all things. And no soul earns evil but against itself, and no bearer of burden shall bear the burden of another. Then to your Lord is your return, so He will inform you of that in which you differed. And He it is who has made you successors in the land and raised some of you above others by various grades, that He might try you by what He has given you. Surely, your Lord is quick to requite evil, and He is...
President warns Moscow of damaging sanctions, including measures personally targeting his Russian counterpart over the crisis in Ukraine.
We say murder! We say murder!
Thousands march in Sydney against the mistreatment of indigenous people on Australia's National Day, an occasion they call Invasion Day. Iran's President Ebrahim Raisi says an agreement could be reached on the 2015 deal if other parties remove sanctions they imposed on the Islamic Republic. Welcome to the program. Starting this hour with the latest on the ongoing tensions over Ukraine, Russia says its southern neighbor is being flooded with consignments of weapons and countless advisors from the U.S. and NATO. Russia's representative to the United Nations warns that Washington is cultivating Russophobia among its citizens and allies. The U.S. and some NATO members say they placed thousands of troops that is on high alert, with the White House warning a Russian invasion of Ukraine could come at any moment. President Joe Biden has even threatened to directly target President Putin with sanctions if Russian troops amassed at the border attack Ukraine. But the Kremlin says it has the right to freely move military forces on its own soil because it feels threatened by NATO's enlargement to the east. Russia is opposed to Ukraine becoming a member of the Western Alliance. Paul Sheldon Foote is a professor at California State University. He says Joe Biden's current policies towards Ukraine are rooted in his political failure at home.
This time around, the crazy one is President Biden. He's saying that we'll be launching an invasion that would resemble what we did in World War II. Excuse me? World War II, we had a draft. World War II, we turned a lot of domestic factories into building war equipment. How many Americans are going to tolerate having their automobile plants and other major factories closed down to make war equipment to satisfy President Biden's desperate needs for re-election because everything's going bad domestically for him, and we have terrible inflation and terrible economic problems? So this is a great way for him to divert attention. He's done very little right. We have massive inflation going on, by American standards at least. And he knows that in November's elections, there will probably be a change in control of the House of Representatives. So he's scared, and this is a good diversion. We have hotheads in the American military, too, just as we did during the Cuban Missile Crisis. who had been very happy to lob missiles into the Soviet Union back then. We have hotheads in the military here who overestimate their abilities.
Historical anger against the mistreatment of indigenous people in Australia continues to this day, and it has drawn thousands of protesters onto the streets once again. The protesters waved flags of Aboriginals and held signs reading "No Pride in Genocide." They argued that Australia always was and always will be Aboriginal land. Australia's 700,000 indigenous people are near the bottom when it comes to economic and social indicators. They live in remote areas where there is no access to government facilities. Some protesters said Australians need to be more responsible for the way the indigenous people are being treated. January the 26th also marks the date the British fleet sailed into Sydney Harbour in 1788 to start a colony there. The date is officially known as Australia Day, but protesters call it Invasion Day. They're demanding a change to the date or its total abolition, arguing that it's a day of mourning for the indigenous people. Iran's president says an agreement could be reached on the 2015 deal if other parties remove sanctions they imposed on the Islamic Republic.
There are some whispers about the U.S. requesting to hold direct negotiations with Iran. If these requests are serious, what will be Iran's definitive stance?
These requests have been made not recently, but they have been made for a long time. Many of the countries that hold meetings with us sometimes carry messages that the Americans have requested direct talks. This is not limited to the present, but has existed for a long time, even under the previous Iranian administrations. No direct talks have so far been held with the Americans. However, what is clear, as we have stated before and we state now, is that if the other sides are ready to remove the cruel sanctions imposed on the Iranian people, there is room for any kind of agreement.
Ebrahim Raisi says Tehran will not tie all other countries' affairs to the ongoing talks in Vienna. He says Iran is pursuing a double approach to U.S. sanctions, their neutralization and removal. According to the Iranian president, the impact of sanctions can also be nullified through boosting relations with Iran's neighbors, including Russia. Washington unilaterally withdrew from the 2015 deal with Tehran and reimposed sanctions against Iran. An eighth round of talks is now underway in the Austrian capital as part of efforts aimed at reviving the pact. Saudi warplanes carry out yet another set of attacks across Yemen's Sana'a province. Yemeni media say the districts of Sanhan, Bani Matar, and Sabin have come under multiple attacks. The raids come a day after similar strikes on the province that targeted the telecommunications tower there. The Saudi-led coalition has ramped up its bombings of the war-torn country in recent weeks. The Yemeni army has been responding to the attacks with cross-border strikes into Saudi Arabia and the UAE. People in Yemen have gathered near the United Nations office in the capital, Sana'a, to protest against the continued detention of 7 oil ships by Saudi Arabia. The demonstrators have vowed to keep up their protests until the ships are released. Abdul Latif Al-Washali reports.
Yemenis have staged a demonstration in front of the United Nations office in Sana'a to slam the Saudi Arabia's continued detention of 7 Yemeni oil ships. A number of health workers were also among the protesters.
Saudi Arabia is still holding 7 fuel ships, all of which have entry permits from the United Nations and have been inspected by UNVIM. However, unfortunately, these ships are pirated in international waters by American and Saudi warships. Yemenis are suffering from a severe fuel crisis in all provinces due to the ongoing blockade by Saudi Arabia. The health sector is the worst hit by this crisis, and this threatens the lives of millions, including children, who are bearing the brunt of Saudi war on Yemen.
The Ministry of Health said the healthcare system is on the verge of collapse as many health facilities cannot provide medical services due to the ongoing Saudi blockade.
There is no doubt that the fuel ban affects all vital sectors, especially the health sector. All hospitals will be subject to shutdown due to the lack of electric power, including intensive care, emergency, blood banks, dialysis centers, oncology treatment centers, and many other departments. There is an inevitable catastrophe that will affect the health sector, which is exposing the lives of millions to the risk of death.
For years now, Yemenis have been suffering from a harsh fuel shortage as the Saudi Arabia keeps detaining Yemeni oil vessels despite obtaining entry permits by the UN. The fuel crisis has heavily affected the health sector and left the war-wracked country in a desperate struggle to survive.
The protesters say the illegal seizure of Yemen's oil ships is a clear violation of international law that prohibits all acts of piracy. They say it is a shame on the United Nations to turn a blind eye to the years-long blockade imposed by Saudi Arabia and its allies on Yemen.
Italian lawmakers failed for the second day in a row to elect a new head of state, as a consensus on who to support continues to elude party leaders. The inconclusive voting comes as the majority of lawmakers once again cast blank ballots. Prime Minister Mario Draghi remains a front-runner, but his chances have dimmed amid fears that his promotion to presidency might cause his coalition government to disintegrate. Meanwhile, the center-left parliamentary bloc has called for talks with the center-right alliance after dismissing their possible candidates. Wednesday's vote is also expected to end in failure, with the race only getting serious on Thursday, when the threshold for victory falls upon the fourth round of voting.
The political stalemate continues. On Tuesday, also a second round of voting to elect Italy's President of the Republic proved inconclusive, with a vast majority of the 1,009 grand electors casting blank ballots, as they did in Monday's first round. Italian political parties have so far failed to find an agreement on a consensus candidate. Meetings between party leaders have continued behind the scenes, and although current Prime Minister Mario Draghi remains the most likely contender, a deal on the figure that unites the country is still far from being reached. Prime Minister Draghi is reportedly trying to persuade political leaders to support his candidacy as Italy's next president. However, a large number of lawmakers oppose this idea, fearing that if Draghi is elected head of state, it could lead to early elections.
We think that President Draghi has to stay at Palazzo Chigi and to continue to do the prime minister, because if President Draghi move to the Quirinale, it's really difficult to find another person like Draghi to continue the work in the government.
Also on Tuesday, the rightist alliance made up of the League, Brothers of Italy and Forza Italia proposed three possible presidential candidates. The League leader Matteo Salvini has repeatedly warned that if Draghi leaves the role of prime minister, the multi-party ruling coalition would likely split, raising the risk of snap elections.
Non siamo qui a imporre.
We are not here to impose anything on anybody. In the last 30 years, the president has always been named by center-left parties. We hope the names we are proposing are received with a willingness to discuss them.
It is very unlikely that a new president will be elected before Thursday. A majority of two-thirds of the grand electors is needed to vote in a new head of state in the first three ballots from the fourth round. So as of Thursday, an absolute majority would be sufficient. Max Civili, Rome.
British Prime Minister Boris Johnson is in deep trouble following latest revelations about more parties at Downing Street during COVID lockdowns. Now an official report into what's come to be known as the Partygate scandal has triggered a criminal inquiry. The Metropolitan Police of London are investigating the potential law-breaking allegations at Downing Street and Whitehall since 2020. Those found to have broken regulations will be fined. Mr. Johnson has welcomed the probe, saying it will give the public the clarity it needs over the allegations. A police investigation started after an internal inquiry led by a senior government official passed information to the force. The inquiry's result is not released yet, but many conservative lawmakers are waiting for the official report to add names to the list of MPs who back a vote of no confidence against Johnson to challenge his leadership. Remaining in the UK, and a school in the British capital is under fire following a row over Friday prayers. This after a footage went viral, allegedly showing a teacher from the school trying to stop students from praying. This is not the first time a school in the UK sparks controversy for similar incidents. Robert Carter is in London.
A high school in North London has become embroiled in a dispute with Muslim students over congregational prayers each Friday. The news broke after students from Park High School in Stanmore shared footage on social media, allegedly showing a teacher attempting to stop students praying Jummah prayers outside. Muslims pray five times a day, every single day, with one of the most important prayers of the week taking place every Friday, known as the Congregational Prayer or Jummah. Now, in Islam, prayers are considered mandatory. That's how important they are, meaning that any Muslim onlookers would be deeply upset and appalled to see students possibly being denied their opportunities to pray.
We've given an account of what happened by one of the social media profiles which shared the footage. They claim the students felt forced to move outside because of the hard time teachers gave them using classroom space. But this isn't the first time a British school has been accused of denying students a prayer space. Back in December, Oldham Academy North was forced to apologise after students prayed outside after allegedly being kicked out of a classroom.
Park High is proud to be a diverse school that welcomes young people from all faiths and backgrounds. At Park High, we have developed the offer of an interfaith reflection room. This is available every lunchtime, providing a space of calm and quiet for private reflection, prayer, or contemplation. The school have been securing additional space and guidance to ensure we can meet the needs of our diverse student body on a Friday.
The school's statement failed to explain why students had prayed outside or addressed the accusations regarding the viral footage. With two incidents of this kind in just over a month, Park High might just be the tip of a nationwide iceberg. Robert Carter, London.
Well, this last piece might scare some of you. A new study suggests that privacy measures meant to preserve the anonymity of smartphone users like you and I are no longer suitable for the digital age. The study says vast quantities of data are scooped up from smartphone apps by firms looking to develop products, conduct research, or target consumers with adverts. The research published in the Nature Communications Journal states that the measures being taken to keep identities private are no longer enough. In Europe and many other jurisdictions, companies are legally bound to keep data anonymous after often doing so by removing telltale details. But the study suggests people can now be identified with just a few details of how they communicate with an app like WhatsApp.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Supplication on Wednesdays. In the name of Allah, the all-merciful, the all-compassionate. Praise belongs to Allah, who appointed the night to be a garment, and sleep for a rest, and day he appointed for a rising. To thee belongs praise, for thou roused me from my sleep. And hadst thou willed, thou wouldst have made it everlasting, an everlasting praise that will never be cut off, and whose number the creatures will never count. O Allah, to thee belongs praise, for thou created, then proportioned, and ordained and decreed, and gave death and bestowed life, and made sick and healed, and made well and afflicted, and sat upon the throne and encompassed the kingdom. I supplicate thee with the supplication of one whose mediation is weak, whose stratagems have been cut off, whose term has drawn near, whose expectation from this world has shrunk, whose neediness for thy mercy has intensified, whose remorse for his neglect has become great, whose slips and stumbles have become many, and whose repentance is devoted sincerely to thy face. So bless Muhammad, the seal of the prophets, and his household, the good, the pure. And provide me with the intercessions of Muhammad, Allah bless him and his household, and deprive me not of his companionship. Surely thou art the most merciful of the merciful. O Allah, decree for me on Wednesday four things. Induce me to be strong in obedience to thee, to be joyful in worshipping thee, to be desirous of thy reward, and to abstain from that which would make incumbent upon me thy painful punishment. Thou art gentle to whom thou wilt.
The limelight.
The chairman of the Congressional Committee investigating the U.S. Capitol attack and Donald Trump's attempt to overturn the 2020 presidential election revealed on Sunday, 23rd of January, that the panel has spoken to the former Attorney General William Barr, a further indication that the inquiry has moved closer to the ex-president's inner circle. The article you're about to hear has been written by The Guardian columnist Richard Luscombe. The piece is titled, Capitol Attack Committee Has Spoken to Trump Attorney General William Barr, Chairman Says. The chairman of the Congressional Committee investigating the U.S. Capitol attack and Donald Trump's attempt to overturn the 2020 election revealed on Sunday, 23rd of January, that the panel has spoken to the former Attorney General William Barr, a further indication that the inquiry has moved closer to the former president's inner circle. Benny Thompson, the chairman of the Congressional Committee investigating the U.S. Capitol attack, told CBS's Face the Nation program that William Barr, who was accused of making the Justice Department Donald Trump's tool, but who resigned before Donald Trump left office, had spoken more than once with the panel. To be honest with you, we've had conversations with the former Attorney General, William Barr, already, Benny Thompson said. His host, Margaret Brennan, asked if the panel would seek answers from William Barr over the discovery of a draft executive order for the U.S. military to seize voting machines in contested states. We have talked to Department of Defense individuals, Benny Thompson said. We are concerned that our military was part of this big lie on promoting that the election was false. If you're using the military to potentially seize voting machines, even though it's a discussion, the public needs to know. News of the interviews with William Barr, who angered Donald Trump by insisting there was no evidence to support his lies of a stolen election, dealt another blow to the former president, whose political and legal woes escalated significantly this week. Unlike other Trump world insiders who have refused to cooperate with the January 6th House Committee, such as the former White House Chief of Staff Mark Meadows, Trump strategist Steve Bannon, and National Security Advisor Michael Flynn, William Barr appears to have spoken to the panel willingly. It reflects moves by the House panel to focus more closely on Donald Trump's actions following the election, including his inciting of the deadly 6th of January attack on the U.S. Capitol. This week, the House Committee asked for the cooperation of Donald Trump's daughter, Ivanka. Our strategy is to get to all the facts and circumstances that brought about 6th of January, Benny Thompson said. And obviously, Ivanka Trump was a major advisor to the president all along. A number of items are attributed to what she's been saying, and so we asked her to come in voluntarily and give us the benefit of what she knows. The inquiry has also subpoenaed phone records of Donald Trump's son, Eric, as well as Kimberly Guilfoyle, partner of Donald Trump Jr. Donald Trump is not pleased, complaining in an interview with right-wing Washington Examiner that the committee was made up of vicious people who go after children. Donald Trump Jr. is 44 years old, Ivanka Trump is 40 years old, and Eric Trump is 38. The House Select Committee investigating the Capitol attack is asking Ivanka Trump, the daughter of the former president, to appear for a voluntary deposition to answer questions about Donald Trump's efforts to stop the certification of Joe Biden's election victory. The move by the panel marks an aggressive new phase in its inquiry into the 6th of January insurrection, as House investigators seek for the first time testimony from a member of the Trump family about potential criminality on the part of the former president Donald Trump. Congressman Benny Thompson, the chair of the Select Committee, said in an 11-page letter to Ivanka Trump that the panel wanted to ask about Donald Trump's plan to stop the certification and his response to the Capitol attack, including delays to deploying the National Guard. Ivanka Trump was a senior advisor to her father during his presidency, as was her husband, Jared Kushner. The two were seen as a power couple, very close to the inner workings of the Trump White House. The questions to Ivanka appeared directly at a key issue, whether her father oversaw a criminal conspiracy on 6th of January that also involved obstructing a congressional proceeding, a crime. The letter said that the panel first wanted to question Ivanka Trump about what she recalled of a heated Oval Office meeting on the morning of 6th of January insurrection, when the former president was trying to co-opt Mike Pence into rejecting Joe Biden's win. The former president was on the phone with the then vice president in an Oval Office meeting with Ivanka Trump and Keith Kellogg, a top Mike Pence aide, the letter said. When Mike Pence demurred on the former president's repeated request, Ivanka turned to Keith Kellogg and said, "Mike Pence is a good man."
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Midstream.
The number of recent attacks against U.S. occupation forces and their deployment sites in Syria and Iraq has increased significantly in an actual translation of the concept of resistance against the American occupation, a concept which Damascus announced its support for on many occasions and which the Secretary General of Hezbollah, Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah, reiterated in his last speech on the occasion of the martyrdom of the two leaders, Qasem Soleimani and Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis. Over the past 2 weeks, the locations of U.S. forces have been the aim of frequent operations, as several bases have been targeted with rocket-propelled grenades and drones, including Conoco, Al-Umar, and At-Tanf. These areas mainly constitute incubators for terrorist factions headed by Daesh, which Damascus accuses Washington of supporting to launch attacks on Syrian army positions in the Syrian desert known as Badia. The large extension and geographical spacing of the targeted sites indicates the extent of the spread of the resistance forces, which carry out their operations in a flash to avoid slipping into a direct confrontation. The continuous attacks on U.S. bases, a number of which are located in areas far from residential areas, makes it impossible to monitor them accurately, especially in light of complete Western media blackout and the security and military cordon that surrounds these bases. At a time when other attacks on sites close to residential areas or large attacks that reverberate to distant places reveal the continuity and diversity of the attacks. In the meantime, while Uncle Sam has been constantly denying that any of his sites have been targeted, claiming the sounds of explosions heard in the area surrounding these bases are military drills. During the past week, the so-called International Coalition executed several operations targeting what it deemed to be missile launch sites. The escalation of the resistance attacks in Syria is accompanied by an increase in the movement of American forces on the ground and the return of American political activity to the Syrian arena after a period of stagnation and uncertainty, which was also paralleled by the return of Daesh activity, which Washington uses as a pretext for its continued presence in Syria. It was noticeable in the attacks launched by the resistance forces, in addition to the wide geographical area they now cover, their focus mainly on consistency, which aims to ensure instability on the one hand and increase pressure on the American forces, making their stay in Syria exhausting and detrimental. Such a strategy may constitute a decisive factor in prompting the U.S. to withdraw, even if it takes more time to get there, simply because relying on constant attacks means waging a war of attrition, in a situation radically different from the previous years, during which Washington was immune and far from being targeted. Welcome to the Middle East Stream, I'm Marwa Osman. Our soldiers are still vulnerable, and we must take this threat seriously. With these words, the Pentagon summarized the situation in the areas of deployment of U.S. occupation forces in Syria and Iraq at a time when Washington began carrying out attacks on what it said were missile launch sites at its bases. It is apparent through the acceleration of the attacks and the expansion of their targeting that the resistance forces have begun a new phase of their operations aimed at increasing the level of risk for the Americans in the event they decide to stay in Syria after they decided to resume their military and political activity there. It is true that this path is not new. But recent developments indicate that there is vigorous effort being directed against the Americans, which during the past year amounted to more than 10 in Hasake and Deir ez-Zor, while it seems that it will exceed this number in less than a month this year, if it actually continues at this new pace. To discuss this issue with us from Damascus is retired Syrian Army General and political analyst Mr. Mohammed Abbas. Well, Mr. Mohammed, thank you for being with us now. Coinciding with the second anniversary of the assassination of the dual leaders, Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani and Deputy of the Popular Mobilization Forces, Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis, we have what is now known as the Popular Resistance renewing its targeting of U.S. occupation bases in Syria, forcing the Americans to withdraw from a 10th base into Jordan in fear of being targeted. How do you assess such an achievement?
Thank you very much. Actually, when we talk about Soleimani, military Soleimani and Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis, we should remember that despite their militarism, they will be able to continue their business in the theater of war. Actually, through the continuation of the popular resistance and the front, confront the occupation targeting America bases, preventing them from any stability in Syria and Iraq, exposing the state of fear experienced by American forces in Syria and Iraq, and forcing them to temporarily maneuver part of their forces towards Jordan, which is an evidence of the American inability to confront the resistance forces. Military American leaders predict that the attacks against their occupied forces are going to be increased much more. That is why America is going to change its troops, instead of the American nationality soldier, change it by the American proxy armies, which consists of ISIS and Al Qaeda and Nusra and other troops, what called the Islamic groups. Indeed, but indeed they are the Arab version of Blackwater, the American security company. That is how USA avoids loses among the there's no soldiers loses from the American nationality, but only you can say the loss of the. The casualties, all casualties nowadays are being in the proxy armies, from what called the American proxy armies, actually.
The resistance fighters not only targeted the U.S. occupation bases of Conoco and Al-Shadadi on New Year's Eve with several mortar and rocket-propelled grenades, but they did it again by targeting the largest American base in Al-Umar, oil field in Syria. Do you expect an increase in anti-American operations in Iraq as is in Syria, or was that latest round only linked maybe to the second anniversary of the martyrdom of the two leaders?
Thank you. Certainly the memory of the military Soleimani and al-Muhandis is so precious to the Syrian and Iraqi people, but the military operations against the occupation forces are going to be continued against the American occupation in many shapes, not only on, by targeting using the rockets or artillery, but there are other types in the targeting in the oil fields, targeting in the military bases, targeting on the side roads, using mines, snipers, using many types of the of obstacles against that American forces. But I'd like to tell you something, maybe or this note, that American soldiers who has nationality soldiers, American nationality soldiers, are using helicopters to move from point to other. But the proxy armies, soldiers or warriors, the American proxy warriors used to use the vehicles and land transportation. Why? To avoid the bombsite explosions or other things. By the way, Syrian and Iraqi citizens will not allow the American forces to continue their practices on our land. They are going to go on for in their resistances But I'd like to say that despite the resistance is still growing, but the American analysts predict a complex, coordinated and deliberated attacks and sophisticated strikes. Resistance is becoming more accurate, more effective, and a spate of escalation in attacks are happening daily. They are using bomb sites, as I said, and rose mines and other weapons. You can use a stone, you can use a stick, you can use the situation of our Syrian people in many villages and many towns who prevent Americans from using the from passing the during the streets or the village. It is a sign or a sign to see or to say that you are we will not allow America to stay in our land.
Well, Mr. Muhammad, it is evident that the resistance factions have pushed the Americans to evacuate El 10th base, as we said at the beginning of the show. But this act actually shows how the Americans are unable to impose any new battlefield equations here. But it gives me a bit of a concern here. There is Syrian concern. General concern that the U.S. might retaliate militarily to attempt to protect its occupation forces in Syria. How do you think that would be possible?
Of course, Syrian people is supporting the. First of all, Syrian people are supporting the public resistance movement, which poses high combat capabilities that emerged through this using artillery, mortars, rocketry, artillery, and other means. With the ability to make serious strategic and high precision of using drones in injury. The American concern about the increase of in operation is clear, and the base temporary evacuation is the evidence of that. Emphasizing that the Americans are retaliating Syrian forces, they are retaliating Syrian forces actually daily. They do not you are waiting them, but they use it daily to retaliate from Syria by how? By using the employing proxy armies or by itself through the exchanging rules between the American and Turkish and Israeli forces by itself or by the proxy warriors. How we can explain, how you can understand the Israeli targeting or strikes, continuous strikes against Syria and the Turkish occupied wide areas in southern of Syria. And the what's about the Syrian defense? What is the Syrian defense forces? SDF. It is another type of ISIS. Mm-hmm. What called SDF is another type of ISIS, another type of proxy American armies. So I'd like to remember or to say that Americans' troops, American jet, bombed Syrian forces in Atharda on 2016, as I think,
by more than forces 100 who Syrian Arab Army soldiers. We remember that very well, and we will never forget that, actually, Mr. Muhammad. I want to thank you very much. Sadly, that's all the time that we have, but I promise that we will have you again to talk more about how the Syrian population is refusing to have occupation, any kind of occupation, on its land. I want to thank you very much, Syrian Army General, retired Syrian Army General and political analyst, Mr. Muhammad Abbas Muhammad, for joining us. Thank you for your time. Now, please stay tuned, because next we will be talking about how Palestinians are facing Israeli bullets on a daily basis in the West Bank.
This is Midstream, and here is IRIB English Radio. Dear listeners, in this weekly program, Marvo Osman discusses two important issues related to West Asia region with two political analysts. Midstream is with you every Friday on IRIB English Radio.
Palestinian Bakir Hashash, 21 years old, was killed by the Israeli occupation in the occupied West Bank early on Thursday as the occupation entered an area east of the northern city of Nablus to make administrative arrests. Meanwhile, 24 Palestinians were wounded by Israeli bullets during clashes that took place in several areas across the occupied West Bank, trying to condemn the illegal settlements. The center of Hebron has been witnessing almost weekly activities rejecting the occupation and settlement building, which the occupation forces confront by firing live and rubber bullets and tear gas canisters. The occupation forces continue their attacks against the Palestinians after launching a massive campaign of raids in the West Bank, especially in Bethlehem, Halhul, and Jenin. Palestinians face Israeli bullets in the occupied West Bank in this following report. Israeli occupation forces continue to assault Palestinians in various cities and villages of the occupied West Bank. The Israeli operation saw the occupation launch a large-scale raid campaign in the occupied West Bank, especially in Nablus, Beit Lahem, Halhul, and Jenin, leading to the death of 21-year-old Bakir Hashash and wounding scores others. Palestinian natives responded to the attacks by retaliating with rocks against the illegal colonial settlers, especially near the town of Tekoa, southeast of Bethlehem. Young Palestinian youth also resorted to targeting a settler bus near Halhul, north of Hebron, with Molotov cocktails to pressure Israeli forces out of their towns. Palestinian media also stated that occupation forces deployed heavily in the Bir Ayyub neighborhood, the entrance to Ain al-Lawza and Al-Ain Street in the town of Silwan, adding that the forces set up roadblocks, closed the streets of Bir Ayyub, attacked the neighborhood with multiple grenades, and arrested two young men, Mundir Waidi and Ihab Abu Sneina. As if the Israeli aggression was not enough, the Palestinian Authority security apparatuses took matters into their own hands, arresting the son of prisoner Zakaria al-Zubaydi, Muhammad al-Zubaydi, along with some of his companions. However, due to the intensity of the situation, the Palestinian Authority was pressured to release Muhammad al-Zubaydi at Saturday dawn, just hours after detaining him in Jenin-occupied West Bank. Muhammad al-Zubaydi, Ayham al-Saadi, and Aus al-Shalabi were released following intense calls to simmer down the situation in the Jenin refugee camp. Public resentment is on the rise against the Palestinian National Security Services in the Jenin camp, with the camp's residents opening fire against the district headquarters, infuriated by the continuous Palestinian Authority crackdown on residents of the camp, especially after a video went viral showing the Palestinian National Security Services inhumanely assaulting and arresting Muhammad al-Zubaydi in Jenin. The use of violence, severe beating, and human rights violations when done by the Zionist entity are clear acts of occupation against native Palestinians. However, when done by the Palestinian Authority are nothing but shameful, reoccurring phenomena in Palestine. Not so long ago, activist Nizar Banat was killed due to the use of violence and severe trauma. The same could have happened to Muhammad al-Zubaydi if the batons had hit the young man in the head. This violence only reflects the security apparatus's incompetence, weakness, divergence from the values of Palestinians, and lack of respect for their dignity. This physical violence will only result in counter-violence and hatred, yet sadly the lack of accountability will simply exacerbate such a crackdown.
Well, to discuss this issue with us from Ramallah is Dr. Nimr Saad, academic at Bir Zeit University and political analyst. Thank you very much for being with us, Dr. Saad. Dr. Saad, 22-year-old Palestinian Bakir Muhammad Musa Hashash was shot in the head after the Israeli occupation forces entered Blata refugee camp east of Nablus city to make administrative arrests late last week. Bakir is not the first nor the last to be martyred at the hands of the Zionist occupation forces, but it seems that fire is raging in the West Bank, this time much different than any other time before. Why do you think that?
Well, it's quite sure for us that the Israeli had ended the last year by killing Hashash, but not that to stop anyway. By the beginning of this year also, the escalation is so high in the Israeli troops against the occupation troops and the settlers against the Palestinians. It's quite clear that there is a kind of an escalation in the last year and all over last year, 2021, Till today, it's quite obvious that the settlers are trying to gain time as much as they could, since the American administration are not interested so far in the Middle East issue, and they are focusing more on the Iranian issue, on Russia and on China, rather than the Middle East. And I think that the Israeli and the settlers particularly, and especially the government, because this government, the Israeli government, is a settler government, are trying to gain the time and try to make facts on the ground that would be very hard to reverse. Because of that, they are trying to grab as much land as they could. They are trying to escalate the confiscation of land, building settlements, and enlarging existing settlements. All that was in a kind of a campaign against the Palestinians in the last year.
Well, sadly, the Palestinian National Security Services are not giving the West Bank any slack either. I mean, the continuous crackdown against Palestinian activists is on the rise, like we just saw last week with Mohammed al-Zubaydi, son of one of the Freedom Tunnel heroes, Zakaria al-Zubaydi, being beaten up and arrested like he was a thug, with video documenting this horrific assault. Although he was released later on Saturday because of all the continuous pressure, it's still physical violence that will only result in counter-violence. Why is the Palestinian Authority adamant on going down the road of violence against its own people?
Yeah, we are getting now into totally another area here, let me say, where when we talk about the Palestinian resistance, we mean that all kinds of resistance for the Palestinian people should be allowed, and Palestinians have the right to resist the occupation in any way they find it appropriate. That was according to the 1982 resolution in the United Nations. Mm-hmm. Now, the Palestinian Authority, and particularly President Mahmoud Abbas, he believed from the very beginning in a non-violence line of resistance. Because of that, the orders for the security forces, in Palestinian security forces, is to stop any kind of violence and to maintain only popular, as they call it, peaceful resistance to the occupation. And at the same time, they are continuing with the cooperation with the Israelis, and especially in the security coordination, which also came as a hard grab against the Palestinian resistors who are trying, you know, to do sometimes some operations. We believe, as Palestinians, that most of the Palestinians believe that the Israeli occupation is an act of violence, as I would put it, as exactly Frantz Fanon had put it. Any occupation is an act of violence, and we need to react in also an, a violence way. That's the only way to resist this occupation. Yes, I believe in the popular resistance, and the both intifadas, the first one and the second one, it started as a popular resistance by the Palestinian people, but at the same time, we do need all kind of other sorts of resistance to exist, and the Palestinian Authority is committing a huge mistake by preventing Palestinians from practicing their own resistance. Now, that would come to an end, which might be, you know, very bad, especially that the Israeli occupation and settlers are continuing on a daily basis in, you know, attacking the Palestinians and grabbing the land. And what is the answer by the Palestinian Authority? It's just, you know, trying to calm down the situation and try to say, yeah, we will resist by the popular resistance. This is not enough, and we believe that sooner or later, and what happened yesterday or the few days ago, last Friday, on Jenin, as the incident that you mentioned, that the Palestinian resistors, they started even shooting at the Al-Muqata'a, at the headquarters, the Palestinian headquarters of the security forces in Jenin, and today everyone was commenting on that, is showing that if the Palestinian Authority is continuing with this kind of line in not attacking the Israeli troops and allowing the settlers in doing so without any kind of resistance, definitely the Palestinians are going to go further mm-hmm. in their resistance.
Definitely. When they see that there is no real resistance on the ground, they will make their own way to resist. I want to thank you very much, Dr. Nur Saad, academic at Bir Zeit University and political analyst, for joining us to talk about the latest very risky situation in the West Bank, with all hopes and support for the Palestinian people, for academics like you, and for the youth like those who are resisting this Zionist aggression. I want to thank you very much. Thank you for being with us, and thank you for your time. Please stay tuned next week on the Middle East Stream. Salam.
In the limelight.
Dozens of women journalists and human rights defenders in Bahrain and Jordan have had their phones hacked using NSO Group's Pegasus spyware, according to a report by Frontline Defenders and Access Now. In this regard, we have prepared an article for you, written by Anna Maria Silik Ryder. This article is titled Pegasus Spyware Used Against Dozens of Activist Women in West Asia. Stay tuned for more. Dozens of women journalists and human rights defenders in Bahrain and Jordan have had their phones hacked using NSO Group's Pegasus spyware, according to a report by Frontline Defenders and Access Now. The report adds to a growing public record of Pegasus misuse globally, including against dissidents, reporters, diplomats, and members of the clergy. It also threatens to increase pressure on the Zionist regime-based NSO Group, which in November was placed on a U.S. trade blacklist. When governments surveil women, they are working to destroy them, wrote Marwa Fatfa, the West Asia region and North Africa policy manager at Access Now, in a statement accompanying the report. Surveillance is an act of violence. It is about exerting power on every aspect of a woman's life through intimidation, harassment, and character assassination. The NSO Group and its clients are all responsible and must be publicly exposed and disgraced. NSO Group was placed on the trade blacklist after a consortium of journalists working with the French nonprofit Forbidden Stories reported multiple cases in which journalists and activists appear to have been targeted by foreign governments using the spyware. The same month, researchers from Amnesty International and the University of Toronto Citizen Lab said they found Pegasus on the phones of 6 Palestinian human rights activists. Last week, another Citizen Lab report found that dozens of Salvadoran human rights activists' phones had been hacked using Pegasus. Pegasus is breathtaking in its ability to take complete control of a device without detection and is often referred to as military-grade spyware. Researchers have said that it can access every message the subject has sent and received, including from encrypted messaging services. It can also access the camera and microphone, record the screen, and monitor the subject's location via GPS. Apple sued NSO Group in November, trying to stop the company's software from compromising its operating systems. That followed a similar suit from Facebook in 2019, alleging that the company was hacking the social media giant's WhatsApp messaging service. ISO group did not immediately respond to a request for comment on the new report. But earlier this week, in the wake of the El Salvador research, it said that it only grants licenses to government intelligence and law enforcement agencies following a process of investigation and licensing by the Zionist regime's Ministry of War. The company added that the use of its cybersecurity tools to monitor dissidents, activists, and journalists is a serious misuse of that technology. In a study published in December 2020, Citizen Lab identified 20 countries whose governments had acquired surveillance systems from Circles, a company affiliated with NSO Group. Australia, Belgium, Botswana, Chile, Denmark, Ecuador, El Salvador, Estonia, Equatorial Guinea, Guatemala, Honduras, Indonesia, the Zionist regime,